Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Web Sleuths Radio. Tonight, we have an incredible show for you. It's going to be very informative and very, very emotional. We'll discuss the case of missing person Jennifer Kessie. Can you believe it's been over 5 years since Jennifer disappeared? Jennifer's brave and incredible father, Drew, is here tonight to update us on his daughter's case, and we'll also ask Drew about Jennifer. We want to find out what kind of person she is and how truly wonderful and the things that she has to offer everyone. So we'll find out more about Jennifer in just a little bit. But first, in December, it will be 2 years since Susan Cox Powell went missing. Her husband, Josh, said he thought it would be fun to take his two toddler boys camping in a snowstorm the weekend Susan disappeared, and it was just a coincidence that Susan was getting ready to leave him when he jumped in his van and went camping in a snowstorm at midnight with two babies. Tonight, Susan's father, Chuck Cox, Susan's close friend, Kersey Hellowell, and Susan's sister-in-law, Jennifer Graves, join us to talk about the latest shocking claims made by Susan's father-in-law, Stephen Powell. This is a guy who gives the whole world heebie-jeebies. Okay, I know I shouldn't use insults. I shouldn't. It's immature. We shouldn't use them at all, should we? Well, we shouldn't unless I say it's okay. And sometimes someone does something so sleazy that it cries out for insults. Now, I'll be sending a link to this show to Stephen Powell directly because I want to ask him something. Stephen Powell, Josh Powell's father, and missing mom Susan Cox Powell's father-in-law, do you realize you have sunk below the deepest layer of prehistoric frog fungi at the bottom of the New Jersey scum swamp with your accusations of inappropriate sexual behavior coming from Susan? Do you realize you win? You win for being the lowest of the low. And a shout-out to War of the Roses for that insult. Now, if you want an example of class and taking the high road, then you've got it in Susan Cox Powell's father, Chuck. When Susan Cox Powell's father, Chuck, was confronted by Susan's father-in-law recently on live TV, Chuck Cox had to listen to the lies Stephen Powell told him about his daughter, horrible, insulting lies about how Susan flirted with him and came on to him. Mr. Cox showed he has class and impulse control like I have never seen before, because I don't know one person who didn't see this confrontation who didn't want to shove a 2x4 in Stephen Powell's nostrils. We'll ask Chuck Cox about all of this tonight on Web Sleuths Radio. But first, let's go to someone who is a very classy man, very decent, loving, and very brave, someone I admire greatly, Drew Kessie. Drew, welcome to Web Sleuths Radio.
Good evening, and I thank you for the time for Jennifer.
Thank you. Drew, your daughter Jennifer went missing Tuesday, January 24th, 2006, when she failed to show up for work. But before we get into the details of the case, Drew, I want to talk about Jennifer's 30th birthday. It was this past May, and you have asked people to do something in honor of Jennifer's birthday. What was that?
Well, I believe this year there was two things. First of all, we always ask on Jennifer's birthday that people give blood. We've given blood all of our lives, and Joyce, her mother, is a nurse of 30-some-odd years. But we always ask that. And secondly, we did ask, we have set up a scholarship at the University of Central Florida, where Jennifer's alma mater is, for college. And she loved it so much that she stayed in Orlando to live and continue on with her career. And we set up a scholarship, the only one set up, for graduate criminal justice students to make it through. And it is for people who live in Florida that will be working in Florida. And we're very honored to do that in Jennifer's name. And it will be permanent in perpetuity. And it's just something that we felt, after learning what we've learned and the mistakes that we've seen, first responders are absolutely the most important people on earth, as we have experienced. And the more we can educate and come out more educated in criminal justice, I think it's only for the best. So we've chosen to honor her that way.
Oh, that is very touching and very wonderful. And we will get into the mistakes of first responders in just a little bit. But first, what I was trying to say at the beginning of the show is we want to know about Jennifer. Tell us about Jennifer.
Jennifer, I always say it to her. I wish everyone could have a daughter like Jennifer, as well as a son like Logan. We've been very blessed to have children who have grown into just incredible young adults, and to see Jennifer just grow. She was always, I don't know, she's bright, intelligent, stubborn, argumentative. She loves sports. She was a New York Giant fan. That's because of me.
Mm-hmm.
But just absolutely, she loved her brother, very close with her brothers, as well as us. And we've had our ups and downs. We're not a perfect family. No one's, I don't think anyone's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But she was very driven in her work and in her studies. She did very well throughout all of her schooling. And really, when she got out of school, she had her choice of jobs, chose her desired position in which direction she wanted to go, and was very successful in the 2.5 short years that she was out of college, and to the point of really almost making more than I.
What was it that she chose to go into?
She was a financial analyst, and basically what she did was streamline backroom mortgages.
Whoa, that would be intense. You'd have to be really smart to do that.
Well, she just had a knack, I think, for numbers. She mm-hmm. started med, and then when she got to college, she said, well, this is a little difficult, and went with it, what she knew best. And I think that turned out for her for the best. And she, in November of 2005, actually, she moved in Thanksgiving Day into a brand-new condominium, over $200,000 plus with her own money.
Wow.
And exactly 2 months to the day later, she was did not show up to work.
And let's just briefly, before we get into the facts, I want to talk about Logan. Her brother, how is he doing? How old was he when Jennifer disappeared, and what? How's he been doing?
Logan just got engaged last month.
Oh, congratulations!
We're so happy for him. It's just, and he has found and chosen an incredible young woman who you can just see it, that it clicks.
Mm-hmm.
But Logan was 21 when Jennifer was taken, and they were best friends.
They watched
out for each other in the family. If one of us got on one of them, you could see the other just backing each other up.
Mm-hmm.
They had incredible, just incredible love for each other, and they were very, very, and are very, very close. How's he doing? You know, we live day to day. We all live day.
Right.
But let's just put it that every day is different. It does not get better. People think it gets better. It does not get better. It gets worse. We're in a place I think really very few people are, and very few people would actually ever want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine what it is or was for Jennifer. But Logan is you know, we have to. We have always said that he will not win twice in this family. It's already struck upon us once, and we are not victims.
Mm-hmm.
Our family has been victimized. Jennifer is the victim, and that's where the focus needs to be kept. It really doesn't quite matter about us, because, you know, we get to go about our day, and I get to have this conversation with you and sleep and eat and
mm-hmm.
do what I like doing. Either Jennifer does not have that ability, or Jennifer no longer has that ability.
Oh, dear.
That's very sad for anyone, not even Jennifer. I mean, it's for anyone in this
Yes.
world.
It's like Mark Klass says, it is a horrible exclusive club that nobody wants to belong to.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Absolutely.
But once you get in it, you're in it. And
yep.
We have chosen to be very proactive instead of reactive, and education is king.
Well, let's talk about Jennifer's case. They believe she went missing on the 24th of January, is that correct?
2006.
2006. Why don't you give us just a brief kind of rundown outline of the facts as we know them today?
Sure. Real quick, she and her boyfriend on January 19th took a 4-day trip to St. Croix. They flew out of Fort Lauderdale into Puerto Rico,
mm-hmm.
then over to St. Croix. They enjoyed holiday with people that we know. In fact, there were six other people there, including children and adults and grandfathers and grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
They were to come home, and when they showed up at the airport, their flight was canceled. So they had to catch another flight on another airline back into Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And Jennifer had a long-distance relationship. She and Orlando, her boyfriend in Fort Lauderdale, and had been a year-long that they knew each other. And
mm-hmm.
very, very curious. I think they were absolutely falling in love, if not so. And upon her return, what they would do is every other weekend they would take turns. She would come up to Orlando. She would go to Fort Lauderdale. And on the morning when they went to work, they would not stop at home. They'd get up very early in the morning, get ready for work, go to work, work all day,
mm-hmm.
and then go home. And that was religious of them.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jennifer came back on the 22nd of January, she came back, got up at her boyfriend's home in Fort Lauderdale, got ready for work, went directly to work, worked all day. Everyone here spoke with her, including most of her friends. She was calling everyone to say she's back and had a great time and all that good stuff. And
mm-hmm.
The very next day, which was Tuesday, January 24th, she did not show up for work. She is incredible with work ethic, and if she was even going to be 5 minutes late to work, she would call her boss.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we know the people that Jennifer worked for, and when she did not show up after a couple hours, her boss reached out to us and said, "Is everything okay?" And I said, "Oh, well, sure. You know, we can always raise Jennifer. Let me give a call, but you know, we haven't. She has not lived in our home 6.5 years, going to college, and then getting
right,
home.
Sure."
And she did not answer, and that was the first time since she was 16 years old that I've ever heard her voicemail go directly to voicemail, not the four rings or anything, just go directly to voicemail, and we knew something was wrong right then.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, we contacted police, got on the road to Orlando, and we were calling the jails in case she was arrested. We were calling hospitals in case they had someone in there that was unknown,
mm-hmm.
and not there. And we continued to call, and when we got to Jennifer's condo, we actually had the management go in to see if, her, number one, her car was there, and it was not.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we got there, we had police meet us, and first Orlando Police Department officer kind of came in, looked around, and said, "Well, she probably had a fight with her boyfriend. She'll be back," and walked out.
Oh, no.
I know. And that's why first responders are the most important.
I don't think they would dare do that today, though, would they? Or would they?
Well, we've changed the laws, and we hope not, but we hear of it. It's continually. We know that mistakes have been made in Jennifer's case. The police have admitted that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that 5 years and 7 months last week, there's been over 1,400 leads called in on Jennifer. The FBI has had the case for 10 months. And gave it back to Orlando Police Department. Basically, they are no further than day one. They can stand at her front door, and they cannot tell us left, right, up, or down. And the FBI has told me to my face, as well as my son, that she has vanished. We have not a clue of where she is, and please no more leads.
Oh, my God.
So, there, you know, there's a lot of things that go on, and every missing person's case is unique. It's a very tough thing that happened to Jennifer, and it's a very unfortunate thing that happened to Jennifer, but whoever did this, and we know more than one person knows what has happened, it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
Someone has to have it in their heart. It's 5.5 years. It's, you know, we understand the chances of her being alive, and we understand the hope that we have because nothing's been found. Nothing's been
mm-hmm.
used. In fact, on her website, findjenniferkesey.com, there's a picture of a person dropping off her car exactly 1 mile down the road 4 hours after she would have been to work on that same day. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
4 hours. We cannot identify that person. Unfortunately, the video that has been taken, his face is obscured in all the shots, and probably the luckiest person on earth. But
is
really, we have two people missing in Jennifer's case, and they're vanished.
Oh, dear. They're talking about the person who dropped the car off, and Jennifer, of course.
Yes.
That's right. I remember seeing those pictures, and it is, it's, he couldn't have planned it better, the way his face was obstructed and you couldn't tell.
It's incredible. I think the mystery would have been over by now if we even got something. But at the same time, we have said that, you know, if you look at that photo, you don't have to see the face. You would know. If you know the person, you know, that's all there is to it. But at the same respect, you know, we got to know all of the clergy in town. We got to know all of the bail bondsmen. And, you know, the scum of the earth, that's where they go. Those are the friends, the bail bondsmen and the clergy. And nothing was ever said on the streets about Jennifer in church, nothing. I truly believe, and, it, you know, it's just something I have always believed, that Jennifer is trafficked. No one knows the person who dropped the car off. The person had a job. Came through, they did what they need to do, and that's the easiest way. They don't need her money. It wasn't her car wasn't robbed for anything.
Right. It was just quick and clean, and that would make a lot of sense. And, you know, when people hear that, I think, Drew, I think they might say, well, you know, that's what everybody wants to believe because you want to believe she's still alive. But I think it goes on more than we realize when we talk about trafficking. And tell me about that.
Trafficking, as we know it, that we can track in America today, is an $84 billion a year industry.
We're talking about human trafficking here.
Human trafficking.
And not just children. We're talking about young women and young boys. They just got to have the look. That's all they need.
Correct. And what I think concerning Jennifer personally, it's just, you know, it's my own opinion, my own thought. But she's more of the Eastern Bloc, more of the Russian, the Ukraine.
The Russian.
Something that would, she would be kept. She would be a belonging. She would not be pimped out. She would not be, but still, you know, she probably doesn't know she's Jennifer.
Yes, and that's again, I can only imagine the thoughts that creep into your head at night, wondering, what if, is this what happening? You know, it just must be a living hell. And that's easy for me to say because I can't even imagine. Is there anything other than just the fact that there are no clues, that this was so clean and so quick, is there anything else that points to the perhaps the reality that Jennifer was taken in and was part of the human trafficking?
No, see, that's the hardest thing about Jennifer's case is that the facts of what we've heard and read about and seen, that's it. There's nothing more to it. And unfortunately, it doesn't have the guts and gore and glamour of other cases around America because of the situation. I mean, you know, we're just a middle-class American family. We were 3 days away from being empty nesters. My son was moving to California for a new career.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter was on her own doing fabulous, and we just moved into what we thought was going to be, you know, the home for the grandkids and everything else. And it's very sad. Things just don't work out, but we're not the only ones. There's many, many, many people. I mean, there's 85,000 missing people in America on average on any given day. There's over a million reported missing every year. So.
And you brought up something interesting, and that is the fact that since there is no, you know, sexiness, no weirdness, that it was just so cut and dry, that it's hard to get publicity for Jennifer's case. We're talking to Drew Kessie, father of Jennifer Kessie, who's been missing over 5 years. And literally, she just disappeared. There are no clues. The only clue they have is an obstructed picture of somebody dropping off Jennifer's car about a mile or so down the road. You can't see his face. You can see his body. But, I mean, there is not a speck of evidence left. And because you are, quote, unquote, a normal family, it's hard to get the media interest. And here's a perfect example. Susan Powell had a lot of interest in the missing West Valley woman here in my home state of Utah. And because her husband was so weird, you know, taking the kids at midnight to go camping on a weekend, and because he up and left so quickly, because there was all this weirdness, her case got a lot of publicity, but then it all died down. And there was just nothing until now, when the father-in-law comes out with these outrageous claims that Susan came on to him, and then the media is all over it. You look at the Anthony family. As tragic as that is, if it hadn't been for George and Cindy and Casey being so weird and just so bizarre, that never would have gotten the media attention. So the frustrating thing about Jennifer's case, from my point of view, from the outside looking in, is you as a parent trying to get the same amount of publicity or even a tenth of the publicity that some of these other cases get.
Well, I must say this. Jennifer, the media and Jennifer, including yourselves, the web sleuths are incredible. Don't think that I never not read.
Thank you.
I'm always there, and I know what's going on.
Thank you so much.
but, you know, I don't know. The Anthonys disturb me only because they are in Jennifer's backyard. They affect Jennifer's case.
Yes. And how do they affect Jennifer's case? Talk to me about that.
They affect Jennifer's case in every way possible. Every search that was ever done for Kaylee overlap Jennifer. Okay, so when you send out dogs, there are specific dogs that are used, and mm-hmm. the number one is after 3 months is going to be a cadaver dog. Well,
mm-hmm.
dog doesn't care if it's Kaylee Anthony or Jennifer Kessie or
sure.
Trey Cassio or Trenton Duckett. Okay, they're finding dead bodies at that point.
Right.
So when the antics that go on, and it's just the absurdness, as you put it, the absurdness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's absolutely absurd what that family has done. What it does is deter people from volunteering when needed.
Yes.
Deters people from giving funds when needed. And, you know, the search and rescue teams that are out there that are total nonprofit and they do that only for the joy of trying to help. It's just amazing. And then the absurdity of the family, and I don't care, you know, I stand by my words and it's my opinion. That's all it is, this gentleman's opinion. You cannot do that. And when it comes into Jennifer's backyard, it has an effect on the opportunity to find out what happened to my daughter, then you are affecting me directly. And that's not going to happen.
I'm glad to hear you. I'm glad to hear you say that.
I am an advocate for those who cannot speak for themselves, which is the missing, abducted, exploited, trafficked, and unidentified. And I will be a strong vocal advocate for them because it is a silent war. And if I don't do it, and if the Ed Smarts of the world and the Kelly Jolkowskis and the Karen Fosters and the Erin Runyons, and I can go down the list of the Lyles, don't do it, no one will. And they deserve it. This country
yes.
has to care about their human beings and their population first and foremost.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you.
Well, we would rather go into another country and have war, as well as, and I am in favor of the military, but we will rather do that, and we would rather go to Mexico and dig up bodies than take care of our own. We'd rather
doesn't make sense.
$100 million to Pakistan and set up take care of our own people. Let's take care of ourselves first. And if we're hurting, look at ourselves first. And we have a lot of areas in this country that can be improved.
Boy, you're absolutely right there. And unfortunately, then you get into the political side of it, because if it's not a political pressure, then it's going to be ignored. And that's just the ugly truth about where we live. And we could do a whole, you know, pack of shows on just that in itself alone. Have the Anthonys reached out to you at all? Has anyone tried to,
We have crossed paths. George and I have crossed paths three
mm-hmm.
times. I really have nothing good to say about the gentleman and his wife. In fact, I think they are disrespecting and insulting every other missing person in America today.
Why is that?
The foundation they are setting up is just, I didn't even watch, I did not watch one bit of the trial.
Mm-hmm.
After 3 years, I kind of had the sense that we were going to have an OJ. And
yes.
I'm not going to watch this. There's too many people involved that I even know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it's just I feel sorry for the family, kind of, but I don't. But mm-hmm. anyway, I don't understand how this family can come out of this show that they're doing with Dr. Phil and
mm-hmm.
the Foundation for Grandparent Rights and Missing and Exploited Children. What sane person is going to give money to this foundation? And I think it's either their third or fourth foundation, nonprofit, they've set up.
Yeah, it is, I think, okay. Yes.
Yeah. So, really, it's to take money such as Dr. Phil is in reality funding their venture.
Okay.
Because Cindy didn't say, no, we don't want anything, which is what I would say. No, we don't want anything. We have never been paid a dime for a picture, an
mm-hmm.
interview, anything. It's quite the opposite in reality.
Right.
So, and then you have this family who won't talk to local media because there's no money there. They will only talk for money.
That's terrible.
And Dr. Phil comes out, and he said, Cindy comes out and says, well, we don't want to be paid. But make a donation to our
network. Oh, of course, yes.
Okay, and then you hear the six figures being rolled around and all that stuff. What it is, who knows, and what it is, who cares.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to understand how nonprofits work. What are they going to do? The last nonprofits, they get teddy bears away. How
that's
do
right.
they help missing children? I don't understand that.
It didn't.
So, we've helped pass four laws in 3 years. Have I ever seen them in our state capitol trying to pass
no.
laws? No. Is George and Cindy out there right now trying to find a murderer of their grandchild? No.
No.
Trying to find the murderer? Law enforcement trying to find the murderer? No.
Mm-mm.
Casey going to charge her father for, quote-unquote, sexual abuse?
No.
Is Cindy going to be tried for perjury? We already know that.
She should be. The whole thing, when you put it in that perspective, Drew, we're talking to Drew Kesey, Jennifer Kesey's father. Jennifer went missing over 5 years ago. When you put it in that perspective, it just makes my blood boil because they're making it's like a mockery. They're making a mockery of it. They're just, so frustrating. We're talking about Anthony's.
And we live with that.
And I don't know how you live with it, but you have a lot more class than I would because I think I would explode. You know, I admire you for being able to be decent about it.
I try. But,
yeah.
You know, we have unconditional love for Jennifer, and the focus is Jennifer. The side antics. Casey is in an unknown place.
Yeah.
She had death threats. Well, we've had death threats since Jennifer.
Right.
Do we get to have an unknown place? No.
Oh,
we've
heck no.
We've been extorted three times. No.
You have?
Sure. But, it's all rubbish. But,
yeah.
$16.2 million to $7 million to $1 million. Mm. It's just ridiculous. Everything that's happened to them happens to them. It happens. But please remember this, and even her own lawyer said it. Kaylee Anthony was never missing. She was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the truth. And the truth never lies.
That's right.
So what they're trying to do in skies is just despicable.
Mm.
And truly, why don't they just take their family and go away? Just take your family and live a peaceful life and try and just go away.
Well, it's obviously not in their nature. And I'm sorry that it is hurting you like that. I can hear it in your voice, and it breaks my heart, Drew. And I wish I could do something to help you more other than just know that you have myself and all of the members and readers at Web Sleuths that are here for you, and we will do what we can to help you in any way. And just know that if you can feel the collective love and support from around the world to you and your family, I hope that does help a little bit.
It does feel that. And as I said, Web Sleuths have been there, honestly, since week one. And I do, we do read it. And just keep thinking, folks. It's best to think outside the box right now. And that's what we need. And you folks do it.
They do. They do a great job. Why don't you give us the website and my perhaps some closing thoughts on what you would like us to know about Jennifer and Jennifer's case. This is Drew Kesey, Jennifer Kesey's father. Jennifer's been missing for 5.5 years. Go ahead, Drew.
Sure. Jennifer's website is Find Jennifer Kesey, and that's JennifereKes, as in Sam, S as in Sam, E.com. You can call Crimeline with any tips and be anonymous at 1-800-423-TIPS, which is 8477. Or you can call, if you wish, the FBI at 866-838-1153. And what we encourage people to do is if you know something about Jennifer and what has happened or someone who's involved, you can go to a lawyer and you will have certain privileges that will help you be anonymous. You can go to clergy. You can go to, you know, sleuths. You can go to a TV station. There's ways of getting information about Jennifer without anyone knowing. And we ask people to think with their heart instead of their head now, because
yes,
there is a difference. And it is time for Jennifer to come home, as well as, honestly, all the missing. They're out there. We know they're out there. And we have to look. 1 in 6 children are brought home by image alone. So just the fact of having her image and where to contact is the best thing we can do. And we've heard from over 60 countries. We thank them so much for caring for Jennifer. We still do get leads every single day, we were told.
Oh, that's good.
Every single day. So you do help. And it is more than anything we could ever ask for from people. And we thank you. And that comes from the bottom of our hearts. And someday it will bring Jennifer home.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Drew. And we will do anything we can on behalf of Web Sleuths members and readers and personally myself, Drew. You know how to find me. Call me. I don't care if it's 2 a.m. I'm here for you. We're here for you. Okay? And we will pray to bring Jennifer home as quickly as possible. Thank you. Drew Kesey, Jennifer Kesey's father. You can go to websleuths.com and check out Jennifer Kesey's forum to find out all the details. We are picking the case apart, even though there's not a whole lot there. We will continue to talk about it and continue to keep Jennifer's name and image in the limelight and in the media. Thank you so much, Drew. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Most humble. Bye-bye.
We're going to switch gears now. We are going to go to another man whose heart is broken, whose daughter is missing, and I'm talking about Susan Cox Powell and her father, Chuck Cox. Mr. Cox, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. I'm going to bring in a couple of other people as well, people that you know. We're going to go to, let's see, is this Kersey?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Is this Jennifer?
This is Kersey. Can you hear me?
Oh, Kersey, yes, I can. This is Tricia Griffith. Okay. This is Kersey Hallowell. She is a friend of Susan's. And now we are going to go to Jennifer Graves. Jennifer, are you there?
Yep. I'm
oh,
on
great.
The line.
Wonderful. You're on the air. We have Jennifer Graves at Susan Powell's sister-in-law. Now, this week we all watched a very disturbing scene, and that was when Chuck Cox was just trying to pass out pictures of his missing daughter. He was approached by Stephen Powell, who is Josh's father and Susan's father-in-law, and Stephen Powell had some very disturbing things to say about Susan, and I won't go into all of the details, but it was just absolutely disgusting. Susan went missing in December, 2 years, it'll be 2 years ago in December, and Josh decided to go camping one weekend and take the kids at midnight, two little toddler boys, take them at midnight in a snowstorm to go camping, and just heaven's unbelievable things happened, and he came home and Susan was missing, and he doesn't know anything about it. We all know that's baloney. Mr. Cox, I would like to go to you first. First of all, welcome, and I want to say how impressed I think we all are with how much class you show in dealing with these people, because I wouldn't have the patience that you certainly do. Tell us a little bit about that. Were you expecting him to show up for Stephen Powell to show up and to basically confront you there while you were trying to hand out flyers about Susan?
No, it was really a shock to see him there. I was expecting to stand on the corner and wave some signs and hand out a few flyers, and that's what I was expecting.
And then he just shows up out of the blue. It's almost he's like a moth drawn to a flame. He just, you know, there's media there. He's got to go to it. Stephen Powell has been saying that Susan has been coming on or was coming on to him. They had this flirtation, and I'm not even sure. It seems to be growing and growing every time I see him on TV, giggling and laughing like a schoolboy. Now, we all know this is absolutely not true. I want to go to Jennifer Graves. Jennifer, Stephen Powell is your father.
Yes.
Tell me about him. Is he to be believed at all? And first of all, before you answer that question, I told you this privately, but I want to say it publicly. Coming forward like you have done is incredible, and I'm very proud of you. I don't know you, but I'm very proud of you. It's hard no matter what. It's hard to do when family is involved, but you are telling the truth, and it's about Susan and nobody else. So thank you for coming forward. Now tell us about your father, Stephen Powell.
Well, we've had a rough history. I chose to mostly disassociate myself and my children, my family from him because of his past behavior. He treated my mother very poorly and was not faithful to her. And can he be believed now? Well, the part about the, you know, obsession with Susan, I totally buy it. He's definitely got one of those.
Why do you buy it?
Susan,
Let me interrupt you for just a moment. There has been, and this is interesting, and Mr. Cox, I don't know if you were aware of this, but shortly after Susan went missing on WebSleuth.com, we were discussing the obsession that Stephen Powell had with Susan, and the media, nobody else picked up on it, and now they're picking up on it, you know, but we've been discussing this for a long time, and it is very apparent that Stephen Powell had this weird, creepy obsession with Susan, and so you're saying, Jennifer Graves, his daughter, that's something that you believe, that he has that type of personality?
Yeah, and even beyond that, Susan told me of some incidences that had happened between them where she was really disturbed by his behavior towards her.
What did he do?
The part about her reciprocating, though, that's nonsense. She really despised my dad. She really didn't want to have anything to do with him. What did he do? He in a car incident, when he was in the car with her at one point, he asked her if she would be willing for Josh and him to just share her.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my gosh, that's awful.
And then another incident that she had told me about was a book that she received from him with pictures in it of Mel Gibson. And in between all the pages were some nude men pictures.
Ugh, that is absolutely terrible. You know, I really don't want to focus on this, although this has been the big topic, because I want to talk about Susan. I feel like I know Susan. I've grown up in Utah, and it seems like all of my friends are just like Susan. And Mr. Cox, why don't you tell us about Susan? What type of girl was she growing up? What type of woman? What type of mother? Let us know about your daughter.
Well, she never caused us any issues. She was always a good student. She always energetic, a can-do, a very positive person, made friends very easily. And if anything, the problem was if she wanted something and it sounded like that was a good thing, she would go and say, okay, that sounds good to me. She was in. And then if it turned out not quite what she wanted, she got a little few lemons with the mix, she'd add whatever it took on her own to make sure it worked out. So she was a can-do person and a very, very loving person. And she just loved children. I mean, her next oldest daughter, or her next oldest sister, my daughter Denise, had children, and Susan just couldn't wait to have her own, and she loved playing with them, and very, very happy to that. So wanted to be a mother and wanted to have a good family and was just looking for that the opportunity to become a mother and have a family and have that life that she wanted.
Why do you think she was attracted to Josh, and why did she marry him? Were there any, two-part question, and were there any warning signs that, he was problematic?
There were warning signs. We never saw what she saw in him, other than at the time when they were first dating and when they first got married, he had his own apartment and he had a job, and he was in school to get a business degree, so it looked like, okay, well, he's, you know, supporting himself, and he's working to better himself, and at least from that outward appearance, everything was, you know, reasonable, except for the warning signs of he didn't seem to have her best interest at heart at anything. I mean, she would come home really late, and she'd drive home really late, and it didn't bother him that she would drive home alone. And it didn't, we never saw him like opening car doors for her or taking care of her in any way, really. And I'm saying, you know, this is not normal in a relationship, especially when you're dating. Most men would be on their best behavior. Most loving or people like that, you'd expect better behavior. And we didn't see any of that.
You just briefly touched on it. He didn't open car doors. He kind of just didn't pay attention to her. This is when they were dating?
Exactly. That's when they're dating, and you would expect, boy, best behavior at that point, at least. But no, she didn't bother. I guess she seemed to be in love more with the idea of being married than going in with her eyes open. And
that could be.
You know, we tried to bring that to her attention, but of course we're her parents.
Yes.
And she's wanting to get going on her life here, you know, so her parents are bringing things, you know. I don't know.
I'm wondering too if maybe she was a rescuer, you know, she perhaps saw somebody that needed to be taken care of. I don't know, I'm just guessing. And a lot of times, I'm guilty of it too, and I bet you a lot of women are, you think, well, he'll change, you know, he'll get into the religion, he'll, you know, do this, when we have kids, he'll change. And maybe, like you said, she was in love with the idea of being in love and being married. And he was LDS when they met, correct? He was not a convert?
Yeah, he was yes.
Okay.
He was.
And that was very important to Susan. That was something that that she was looking for. And now they met in Washington State. Is that correct, or was it here in Utah?
In Washington State.
Okay. Well, and you know, and I'm sure that it might not be very easy to meet nice young Mormon men, especially outside of Utah. And so perhaps, like you said, she just put the blinders on, like so many women do. Was there ever a time that you were fearful for Susan? We're talking to Susan Cox Powell's father, Chuck Cox, and Susan Powell has been missing since December of 2009. Was there ever a time that you felt worried for her safety?
Not really. The idea was, well, he's not treating her the way I'd like her to be treated. There's warning signs to me that, you know, beginning of a relationship and a boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, something's not quite clicking the way it should be. But I never saw him, you know, hurting her or anything. Sometimes they would have a disagreement or two, but when he came up with a really strange idea that she would generally talk back to him or talk, you know, say, no, that's not right. And he seemed to take the, when he was really off base, and when she said something, he seemed to take that and give it credibility and you know, and take her advice. And so I thought, well, okay, so she's not going to be just meek and mild and take whatever just out. She's going to be a player, you know, an equal partner in this relationship. And so I figured, well, that's a good sign. But no.
When you said that he... When you said that he came up with weird ideas, do you have an example?
Well, not really. I know they've had lots of issues. We try to help them out financially at times and things. I had an apartment there and that he had, and he decided he was going to he was going to take on the apartment management. Because he felt somebody was being treated unfairly, and he was going to take them on himself and be the lawyer for the apartment. Which
oh, my gosh. And he's not a lawyer, no.
And we suggested to him that that's not a really smart idea, because when the complaints of the people were, you know, the apartment should, complex owner should give him this and that, you know, these things, and you know, they should give us two garbage cans. And I mean, it was just not really worth the battle type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed it with him, and we said, no, don't. But she says, well, you know, Josh thinks we can do it. We can do it. So she was trying to support her fiance, whatever. And they ended up owing back rent on their apartment, stopping paying their rent, which, of course, you know, you're going to lose that one at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they basically evicted him from the place, and he had to pay their attorney fees. And we told him, you know, you need to get an attorney. He said, oh, I can do this myself. And, you know, but Susan was saying, are you sure, Josh? And so she would talk to him, but then she was trying to stay on the side of her fiance, and I think it was
sure.
Right after they were married. So I said, okay, well, it's good that they're supporting each other. We think
mm-hmm.
this is going to end up, but, oh, well, you know, you can't do things for your kids. You have to let them.
You have to let them make their mistakes. Absolutely.
And you wouldn't
think that would lead to anything. You might just think I would think he was odd, and, you know, I might think he was maybe delusion of grandeur or something. But, yeah, that is very strange. I want to go to Kiersey Hollowell. She is a good friend of Susan Cox Powell's. Kiersey, I've heard this story about a vegetable garden, that Susan had to grow her own food because Josh wouldn't let her shop, but yet she was the money maker. Am I getting this confused?
No, that's pretty much how it was. When they first moved to Utah, the house they bought was in a kind of bad condition, so they worked hard to restore it and get it better. And the backyard was a mess, and they worked really hard to till up an area for a garden and put in sprinklers. And Josh liked to talk everybody's ear off all the time for hours on end about the great work he was doing and the amazing garden he was making and all the sprinklers he was putting in. And after a while, he came to realize that it was really Susan who was doing all the work, and he was doing all the talking and bragging about it and saying it was always him. And so the first year or two, they had this garden, and she was doing most of the work on her days off. And then after a while, he started to get more and more kind of bossing her around and controlling, I guess I would say, and starting to tell her that they didn't have money for food and she had to feed the boys from what was out in the garden. And at one point, their daycare provider, who was taking care of them, told Josh, you need to feed the boys real food. You're giving them fruit and vegetables only, and they are having constant diarrhea. They can't have that. And
mm-hmm.
he tried to argue with her and tell her it was fine. But, yeah, he would tell her that she had to feed them out of the garden and that they didn't have money for food, and yet she was earning all this money and basically supporting them. And so I told her after a while, I said, that's not right. You're earning the money. You should have the money go into your own account, and you should buy food with it. And I don't care.
Absolutely.
What you do.
Yeah, I bet that was very, very frustrating for you, Kiersey. I mean, to see one of your dearest friends go through something like that and have to deal with someone who's obviously a megalomaniac. I mean, my gosh, that's just awful. We're talking about Susan Cox Powell. She has been missing since early December 2009. We are fortunate to have Susan's father, Chuck Cox, her very good friend, Kiersey Hollowell, and her sister-in-law, Josh Cox's sister and Stephen Cox's daughter. I'm sorry, what?
Josh Powell.
I'm sorry. I knew I would get this mixed up. Josh Powell's sister and Stephen Powell's daughter, Jennifer Graves. Jennifer, your father,
yes.
Stephen Powell, who is Susan's father-in-law, was he ever
mm-hmm.
violent with your mother?
No, not really. He hit me a couple times, like slapped me, but he would use the belt on us kids. But not that I'm aware of did he ever, like, beat my mother, but he
mm-hmm.
was extremely verbally abusive towards her. She couldn't do anything right.
Did he try and control her? Was he very controlling? She couldn't go out, couldn't do things like that?
Oh, he was very controlling, and he tried. My mom still insisted that she would go to church, but he wouldn't let her take the kids unless they wanted to, which, of course, he was always trying to talk them out of it, and he was controlling with the money, didn't want her to spend stuff on whatever. So he you know, tried to lay down the line, and she was always trying to fight against it.
Were you scared of him?
In my later teen years, yeah, I actually was. There was one incident when he slapped me and was screaming, and I ran next door. My uncle happened to live next door to us, and I ran next door to just find a safety zone for a minute, a little while. And when I got back, he told me, "You better never go and tell anybody what goes on in this house again, or you won't come back."
So he threatened you with the murder, basically.
I don't know if he threatened me with murder, but he threatened me that I wouldn't have a place to live anymore.
Oh, he was kicking you out. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel physically threatened? Did you ever? I mean, I know he hit you, but did you ever think he could step over the line and really harm you?
I don't know.
Let me change that.
But it's hard to go back into my teen years. You know, yes, I was terrified at times.
Mm-hmm.
But it was my teen brain, you know. Was
sure.
I just afraid of being out on my own suddenly when I was, you know, 16?
Well, that's a scary thing for a dad to threaten to say, "Hey, I'm going to kick you out if you ever say anything." Sure, you were terrified.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one question, and I don't mean to make you uncomfortable, but I think it's important with all of this going on. Did he ever behave inappropriately to you, towards you?
Not that I recall. Maybe when I was younger, but I don't remember anything like that.
Okay.
He did have a pornography problem, though, which I did find stuff of his. Which, you know, that's kind of an inappropriate thing no matter what.
Well, absolutely. That's terrible.
And
I'm assuming I would assume that has continued on. I mean, people like that usually do not change. We are talking about Susan Cox Powell. She's been missing since December 2009. We're talking to Jennifer Graves. Jennifer is Josh Powell's sister and Susan Cox Powell's sister-in-law. What type of relationship did Josh have with his father, Stephen? Jennifer?
You know, he tried to separate himself a little bit once he moved to Utah. I think that somewhere in his mind, he realized that relationship would not be good for him, and he tried to put some separation there, but I don't know, he succumbed, I guess, and ended up being sucked back into, you know, kind of a deep relationship there where he was talking with him for 2, 3, 4 hours at a time, multiple times a week there for the last 2, 3 years. You know, it got worse and worse as time went on for probably the last 3 years.
Doesn't sound healthy. Let me ask you, and this is just your opinion, okay, I know you're not accusing anyone. Do you think that Josh and Steve had something to do, Josh and your father, had something to do with Susan's disappearance?
I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
Do you feel that Stephen, your father, pretty much controlled Josh, and Josh answered to him?
He's pretty much, yeah, he's very controlling. He still listens. You can still hear it in the way that he talks. The high and mighty, you know, he gets on a high horse. Those just sound like my dad's words.
Oh, boy.
Josh doesn't normally talk like that on his own.
Right, so it kind of sounds like maybe dad's putting words into the little boy's mouth there.
Mm-hmm.
Kiersey Hallowell, friend of Susan Cox Powell, earlier this week I spoke to some coworkers of Susan's. They're not allowed to talk about the case while they are still working at this particular company. But I did talk to some people who used to work with her and actually have left the job, and they were able to talk. And Susan kept a journal at work about the weird things that Josh would say to her. Are you aware of this journal?
I am aware of it, but I can't really say a whole lot about it because of the investigation.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. We don't want to mess anything up there. Let's talk about the investigation. Last week, the police had a search warrant to go into Stephen Powell's house, and they went in there. We don't know what they took other than computers. We think they took the journals. We have Susan's father, Chuck Cox. Chuck, what do you know about the search warrant and what was going on with that situation?
I know I was trying to get a few minutes rest between interviews, and I got a phone call from the police department that said we're serving a warrant.
And that's all
I knew about it.
That's all you know. Have you heard anything about it afterwards, what they took, anything at all?
From media outlets that were there watching from the outside, they said that they took out 6 computers, and Steve Powell, I think 5:30 and 5 or so early morning interview on the day after the search. I think they came went in on Wednesday, or did they go Thursday? Anyway, the morning after, he told the media that they took Susan's journals and his own personal journals, and it was very strange that he said he took my journals, and he says that he didn't like that because there's personal things in there and they could be embarrassing to him.
Oh,
please. So you're willing to publish my daughter's journals, teenage diary journals, but you don't want your journals out anywhere. You know, and of course it's in the hands of the police if that's true, if they did take his journals. And the police aren't going to publish anything unless they, you know, they're not going to publish anything. You know, they're safe. So anyway,
exactly. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, that just shows what type of person Stephen Powell is. He would publish the journals, like you said, of a teenager and embarrass her and her family and not think twice about it. But heaven forbid anybody wants to look at his stuff. Oh no, we can't do that. We're talking with Chuck Cox, Susan Powell's father, and Chuck, this is a difficult question. But I have to ask it. What do you think happened to Susan? What is your thought on that?
In my mind, there's only two possibilities. She was kidnapped and is being held somewhere, or she has been murdered and his body has been disposed of, and we have to find her. The sliver of hope that she'd been kidnapped is still alive somewhere. I know my daughter's a very strong person. I know that she, if there was any possible way she'd contact me, she would. And I don't think there's no way she's hiding and afraid of something, because with the media we've had on this and everything, she knows that we're perfectly safe. There's absolutely no leverage that somebody could have against her to stop her from contacting us. There's just nothing out there that would, you know, they could use against her. Possibly with exception of if somehow Josh has her somewhere and he's saying you won't see your boys again or something like that. That's the only thing I can think of. But I don't think that's possible. And I don't think he's smart enough. I don't think, I just don't think that's possible. So that comes back to, you know, basically either she's kidnapped or murdered. And frankly, there's no statute of limitations on either one of those. And I think the police are doing their job very well.
Do you think that Stephen Powell has anything to do with this?
Yeah, I don't know. Most of these revelations, I knew about the issues with Susan and Stephen, and I confirmed that she had told us that was one of the reasons they moved to Utah to get away from him. But as far as any involvement of Steve and her disappearance, boy, I have no idea. And I know that I know the police are on top of it. They've got all kinds of evidence that I've never seen and don't even have a clue about. The police's lips have been sealed by court order, and the results of their warrants are sealed. So they're not saying anything and not telling me anything, any specifics, and I'm perfectly fine with that.
Chuck Cox, what would you like to say as we wrap this up? I am assuming you want everyone to keep searching for Susan. Is there a website? What can you tell us?
Well, contrary to popular Steve and Josh's claims on the website, the SusanCoxPowellFoundation.org is the website that we maintain, and except for we haven't been able to post anything for a few days, but,
mm-hmm.
but we're working on that. But we maintain, and it's designed to provide updates on what's going on with the case, and also a place where people can go for their missing people, and to help families and people enduring domestic violence and other issues to try and help people, because that's what we want to do. So I'd like to kind of steer things away from Steve Powell and the Powell family. I think everybody can see them for they've exposed themselves to the world for who they are, and it's just detracting from actually finding Susan and finding the answer. Somebody out there knows something, as Drew said before. You get the picture out there. Somebody knows something. We get that clue, that tip that brings this thing to a close and helps the police and return Susan to us, or we find her body and we move on with the thing. So,
and what is
the behind me?
I agree with you 100%. What is the address again of the website, sir?
The Susan Cox Powell Foundation.org.
Okay. We'll definitely put that up on websleuth.com. And on behalf of everyone on WebSleuth, the posters and the readers, we want you to know, Mr. Cox, that as we are with Drew Kesey, we are here for you. We are praying. And we are talking about the case, and we're coming up with ideas. And I know a lot of people involved in the case read at websleuth.com, and we invite you to come and check out the Susan Powell forum that we have set up for her. Kirstie Halliwell, thank you so much. I know it's been a crazy week for you, and you have just been such a great advocate for Susan. Thank you so much. We will be talking to you again soon. And Jennifer Graves, you are Josh's sister and Stephen's daughter, and you are speaking out on behalf of your sister-in-law. Again, I applaud you. That's a very brave thing to do. Thank you, all of you, for joining us tonight on Web Sleuth. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Oh, well, that's it for websleuth.com, actually. Oh, you know what? I forgot to read the legalese. Let's see. Where is the legal? Ah, here we go. Are you ready?
Ready.
Scary legal stuff. Is that you, Kimster? Are you back? I guess not. Okay. The opinions expressed on Web Sleuth Radio are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of WebSleuth.com, the website, which is a totally separate corporate entity. In other words, in just people terms, don't get your panties in a wad if we say something you don't like. You can call us or, you know, come to Web Sleuth or write me a nasty, dirty email, whatever, you know, whatever floats your boat. Just join us on websleuth.com. If you want to help victims of crime, victims of kidnapping, of murder, their families, we're there to help, and you can join in. Everybody's opinion matters on WebSleuth. So come to websleuth.com, look around, read, and join in. We'll be here next week, and our guests on WebSleuth Radio, I have no idea, but it'll be very interesting, very topical, and I certainly hope you will join us then. Every Sunday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, it's WebSleuth Radio. Take care. Bye-bye.